This is a production of Cornell University.
SA meeting, February 3rd, 2011.
And I'm calling the February 3rd student assembly meeting to order. Before we begin, I want to introduce our new SA clerk, Melissa Argandoni. Sorry, tough last name. So, welcome. And now, would you please call the roll? Here.
Here.
Present.
Unexcused. Unexcused. Here.
Here.
At the meeting.
Here.
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 Unexcused. Unexcused.
Here.
All right. Next on the agenda is approval of the December 3rd minutes. This was our special meeting, I think. Does anybody have any corrections to the minutes? Seeing none, unless there's any dissent, the minutes are approved for the December 3rd meeting.
Open microphone. If you have anyone in the audience who would like to touch on a point not currently on the agenda, please feel free to come up to the table right now. Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to move to close the open microphone session.
All right. First up, our two elected student trustees are going to give a brief report on the recent trustee meeting and their activities. So please come up to the table and let us know what's going on.
What exactly is my
incentive splits for every dollar, 46 cents goes to financial aid and certainly tuition fees. So that's just something very important. And in terms of it, it's a survey class, if I give you a number, it's a survey class in today's world, with additional based on class basis to the individual college. So this is something very important to know for us. There have been a few emails going around about students going to Washington and students going to the Senate. Please see those emails. Please make your voices heard. Inform all of us to talk about the need for financial support from both of these specific areas. So expect that our relatives and constituencies encourage them to really reach out to that line. Additionally, GIFTRA is a very well university. Also, a head note was Saturday was a phenomenal leadership conference in D.C. with about 800 alumni that got together. This is really speaking well in terms of what alumni are doing, and more specifically, alumni affairs. So, do get involved if you're interested in that. Lastly, there still will need to be a need for university administrative cuts, as outlined in the past year and a half in terms of the reports that need to be done. That is continually going to be a problem and focus for the years to come by 2015. So, you know, where we are right now, as constricted, or even, unfortunately, a little bit more constricted, to be aware of those sort of announcements. Additionally, the student life committee, this was actually my mission to present some of the off-campus issues, specifically for the housing. These are probably all of that email. There's going to be a little bit that's going to be done in terms of to speak to issues that are going on with students and lenders, and to real estate and college now. So this is becoming an administrative focus, and it's actually more important to make this a priority. Because we've done what campus, we've done what campus. How about the 47% of students that live off campus? So that's a big thing that's going to be looked at and shown in each town with a few of you in the months to come. Other than that, if we're looking to March, the meeting will be actually on campus, so please be aware of our announcement that we'll have for some of you to come, meet with some trustees, meet with some trustees. And additionally, one of the things we're going to talk about is strategic plan. So it's going to be a continuing discussion. The thoughts that you may have, issues that you have come across in terms of your constituency, please feel free to discuss that with both Derek and myself, and we can take that throughout the conversation when we come either March or April.
We have a few questions. Representative Proust is first.
Daily Sun last semester had published an article that was describing the financial aid policy that will be changing the next couple of years for something more like partnering and Princeton policies. I was wondering, since we haven't heard any information or new information to follow up on that, if those policies would go into effect with these new budget increases.
So they actually, so that was actually increased this year. We worked on financial aid that didn't match sort of clause or that didn't match the IP plus, which is also a pretty standard huge percentage. So this is actually in place, committed for the next couple of years, I think it's the exact date. That's something that was going to be sent by us to make sure that we get it for the student. It actually hasn't had an effect. There's some markets in terms of currently right now, the way that we've been able to get students to offer them these packages. So it has had an effect. But I mean, of course, it's, you know, consumer financial aid, but it's something that universities are committed to.
All right, Representative Kerr.
Representative Chris, to answer your question on Jay Parker's perspective, and it shouldn't be that policy should be affected by the cut anytime soon. My question for the future state is, do you know how much is going to be just divided by college? Because I know Cal has received a lot more state funding than the other two content colleges.
Well, I don't know if you know Cal has a lot of certain funding for staff members and connections to the university is by student based money. So those specific lines may be by student cuts on the state. And then,
and one quick note that I just thought of is that SUNY is actually going through the same issues right now with financial aid stress and all the issues. So I know there are good opportunities for students coming along with their system to interact with my aid around here. So I'm not sure who's heading that out right now, but that may be something that the college is going to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, we have two representatives, Ray Mensa and Matt Danzer, to the SUNY Student Assembly, and I think Matt Danzer, and I'm sure Ray and a few of us are going to tackle that issue with the rest of the SUNY system. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, thank you for the presentation, and you know, we look forward to President Gordon's presentation as well. Next on the agenda is an update, an elections update by Director of Elections Charlie Bowman.
So, assets are all in the office right now, as well as on the west in terms of people running. I haven't done a last check in terms of if anyone's attending. I think my guess would be that given the fact that it's only Thursday, the tax is releasing 1 minute, no one's kind of finalized all their documentation yet. The two things I'm currently working on are actually basically finalizing a board to send out to a bunch of organizations that have started to compile, as well as finalizing an ad that we can run on the sign, as well as incorporating it into the emails and boards.
Are there any questions? Any audience? Anybody in the audience have any questions? Feel free to raise your hand if you do. All right. Seeing none, are there any other, we have 2 minutes till President Scorn's supposed to be here, but are there any other announcements and reports? Representative Smith.
Just to do a reminder, I'm going to be supporting the new voting but we can really strike that all together. I actually have a call from Barbara Marlin, the director up there in Trump, and I'm going to be supporting the other issues, giving me over.
Any questions, Representative Smith? Any other announcements and reports? Representative Proof?
The past weekend, I don't know if many of you saw, there were 34 mock trial teams here at Cornell for the annual Big Red Invitational. It's held directly for the mock trial circuit. 34 teams. Cornell played 2 teams in the top 20, with the first 2 teams that came from the independent circuit. So it was very effective for leading university and the mock trial circuit.
All right. Last report. Go ahead, Representative Kerr.
As it's alluded to earlier, there's a financial aid march on Washington. I just sent all the information out to the listener. So I encourage you all to go. It's March 1st and 2nd. I will go myself, but I understand that one.
All right. Thank you. We are actually going to go a little bit out of order here and do Resolution 53 because it's not going to take too much time, and then we'll devote the rest of our discussion probably to Resolution 37 after the meeting, after President Gordon. So we're going to move straight to Resolution 53, Communications Budget Change, sponsors VP Nick Leddy and VP Rapp. All right, you have 4 minutes to present your resolution.
Outreach program. is leaving in 2 weeks. And besides being our blog and the way information out for students, our minutes, SAVB, everything like that, it's also going to be Cornell's first social media network. You can actually log on through Facebook. And what it's going to have is a lot of different chats and forums where student organizations as well as individuals can not only Facebook chat right on our website, but can also have forums, meetings, and send private messages to students and organizations all over the place. So take, for example, we have the student assembly product page, right? So the communications committee can log on through our product page and post something like, we as a student assembly are aiming to raise $50,000 for Haiti. Who wants to get involved? Different student organizations that have their product pages can log on and say, that's a great idea, I'd love to get involved. Different individuals that wouldn't know about the student assembly of any other way or more know about this organization because they're not involved in the student group can log on and say, I want to get involved with this, how do we do it? You can either have your meetings online through our chat forum, or you can decide a place to meet, and it can all be done right through our website. Not only that, but we're also going to integrate the university calendar as well as events going on that you only find out through Facebook, through the Cornell network, right on our website. So it's going to get a lot of different students involved, a lot of people that wouldn't necessarily know about us, and also to get all the information and all the work that we're doing out there. The only problem is that the communications committee doesn't have the funds to have this, to do all this and to do all the communication for the rest of the year. But we do have special funds, and this is something we've been trying to do for a long time now. So Vice President McClay and I decided that it would be good for us to take it out of our special fund, and that's going to be pretty good for the students.
So more specifically, we have approximately $50,000 over the year spent. We get about $36,000 from the student community, but there was a surplus of rollover from last year. So we only budgeted what we would be spending in SAS, which means that the surplus, which wasn't budgeted, is basically restricted. We can't use it. And so the only way to use it for these really good and special projects like the website is for the SAS as a whole, which we would. So it's somewhat of a technicality. So $650 for website services and $350 for additional promotion for the website, as well as promotion for the next parent community forum and other initial programming for communication.
All right. Well, before we go to questions, let us welcome President Gordon and Vice President Susan Murphy to the floor. President Gordon, VP Murphy, thank you for coming. Always a pleasure. And, you know, please, if you have any introductory remarks, feel free.
The financial situation in the university, thank you so much. The financial situation in the university is high on my mind, and I'm sure with the announcement of the tuition situation, it must be on your mind as well. And I'm glad to talk about that as the first issue up if you want to. And also, just in the last 48 hours, we all learned about the governor's recommendations for the state budget and how that would impact Cornell University. So those are the two things that I've been thinking about a lot. Overall finances relevant to student tuition and... state finances relevant to student tuition and the plans, the governor's plans to try to right the ship of the state and head the state toward a more sustainable budget. Those are the things I've been thinking about in the last couple of days. But it's good to see you. I hope everybody's doing well so far in the new semester, and I'm glad to answer any questions. Let's, Dr. Murphy, would like to add any?
Let's open it to your conversation.
All right, thank you. First, and as always, thank you guys for coming. I really appreciate you guys having informed on this work. And I think you had mentioned it when you first started about the state budget type that Governor Cuomo kind of announced earlier. And so, specifically as representative of the College of Agriculture and Life Science,
impacted. I was curious about the impact to the university, specifically the statutory college operating budget, maybe not specifically capital sectoral aid, comment about the pressures of state support for statutory colleges, how they're going to impact these areas of the university, and more if you can comment on future tuition increases or maybe cost-cutting measures and future pressure that the state budgets will continue to have if future state budgets are going to continue to cut aid from Cornell and finally possibly financial aid impact.
Sure. Is it acceptable that we spend a little time talking about this? It's a broad set of issues. This may eat up, 10 or 15 minutes, if that's acceptable to the SA.
Absolutely.
Okay. Cornell has got a wide variety of revenue streams, different than most universities in the country. Just to remind you what those revenue streams are, the largest single source of operating funds for the university is your tuition, 22,000 students, including the medical school, and it's about a quarter of the operating revenues for the university, give or take. State support has typically been about 10% of the operating funds at the university. Earnings from the endowment have been about 10%. Outright gifts have been 5, 6, 7%, depending on the year. That is, gifts given to use that year, as opposed to earnings from the endowment. The faculty in New York City who see patients, it's sort of like a closed loop. They bring in about 20% of the total revenue of the university, and it's used in the medical school. And then the faculty, staff, and students bring in a very substantial amount of research funding from the federal government and other sources. Most of that is used to operate the research operations. In the last 2.5 years or so since the recession, some of those revenue streams have been impacted and some have not been impacted. The big one, of course, that we were all worried about and suffered through starting in 08 was the market decrease, which changed the endowment earnings and also cut back the ability of people to give philanthropy, remembering that in the aggregate that's about 15-16% of the operating funds. And that was, we had a very rough year and then it bounced back a lot, and we've had very, very strong philanthropy in that regard. The state support, like many states in the country, has been up and down over the years, and the contract colleges over many years have dealt with many cyclic decreases in revenue, as public universities have all over the country. In the last 4 years, if the governor's budget is supported the way it has been presented so far, with about another 10 or 12% decrease in the budget, would be down if that occurs, over the last 4 years, somewhere between 25 and 30% in state support. So between 25 and 30% of that 10% of that 10%. Now, it may not sound like a big deal because it's 2 or 3 points on the total university's operating funds, but just as the question raised, this is concentrated traditionally in the contract colleges, and it's important to know that the state support comes in multiple ways. It comes as outright appropriation. It comes as special contracts for research or for service. It comes in the form of capital development, and the governor's budget kept the capital development going, so our plans to deal with Warren Hall and Stocking Hall, so far as we know, if the governor's budget is supported, would go forward. But the operating funds continue to be a problem and will put strain. So that's one side of the equation. On the other side of the equation, it's been very, very typical of higher education to balance the budgets in part based on raising tuition. And Cornell has done that as well. I don't know of any part of the country or any type of institution that hasn't done that when there's pressure on one revenue stream. I'm very concerned about this and have spent a lot of time thinking about it and believe that there's really three answers to this. The long-term answer, which is the answer that we have to strive for, which does not help you as much as it will help generations of students after you, will be to reduce the cost of operating the university so that eventually the price of going here will be reduced. And Just as recently as today, Vice President Murphy and I were looking at some data, and I was going to leave it with you if you want to, and I want to be open about it. If the Sun is here, they can have it. I'm going to be meeting with the Sun editorial board tomorrow. But this is a graph, and I realize it's hard to see from where you are, of tuition increases since 1968. Now, there's one big spike. Let's just ignore that spike for a moment, because spikes in data tend to throw off trends. But the trend is clearly downward. The lowest year we've had in four decades for tuition increases was 2009-10, the first year after the recession started. I spoke with the SA at that time, and we did a lot of belt tightening, crossed the board cuts, made a lot of changes in order not to have to have such a robust tuition increase. Still that year, the increase was twice inflation. And so the trend is clearly downward. We're clearly cutting enormous amounts of the operating budget of the university toward eventually being able to get the net price down for the students. So that's one thing. The second, of course, is need-based student financial aid. And we have had enormous, enormous increases in that. About half of the students at Cornell now, half the undergraduates, get student financial aid. And for virtually all, not every single student, but for virtually all those students, it costs less to go to Cornell now than it did 5 years ago. That doesn't help the students who are above that line, but I just want to say that that is some evidence of success. The families earning $75,000 or less are paying less net cost of attendance than 10 years ago at Cornell. Now, what does that mean, $75,000 or less? The median family income in the U.S. is about $60,000, the median. So if we're saying that $75,000 and below are paying less than they were 10 years ago, that means that the country as a whole, and I'm going to get to our student body in a moment, but the country as a whole has the opportunity to come here and pay less than 10 years ago, because above the median income of $75,000 and below, it costs less to go here. Now, our student body distribution of income is not the same as the national distribution of income. As in all colleges of this type, the distribution of income at Cornell is higher on the income by average, and the distribution is higher. So there are plenty of our students who are struggling to pay the tuition, who fall above the threshold for student financial aid, but who cannot afford to pay cash for this expensive education. I was in that situation when I was in school. It took me, as I mentioned to some of you before, over two decades to pay my loans off, and things were a lot cheaper then. So we're not where we need to be. We still are raising tuition more than I wish we were, but I do want you to be aware of the data and to realize that it's going downward in almost a linear fashion, but not fast enough, and we have to work on those two factors, reducing the cost to run the university and increasing student financial aid. Between those students whose families can afford to pay cash, between those students and the students who fall, you know, into the financial aid category, which I say is about half of the undergraduate student body, there's obviously a gap, and we're very concerned about that gap. We haven't dealt with that gap well, and those families are doing a lot of extra heavy lifting in order to keep Cornell moving. Now, the question about the state reduction that you might ask, and I'm sure the extrapolation of your question is, what's going to happen to the students in CALS and the students in the contract colleges in general? And we're trying to figure that out right this minute. Now, some big issue, of course, is what the legislature actually does with the budget. This is the executive budget, and it's possible that it will change between now and when the final budget is put in place. But we're planning, and we've had, you know, one day so far to do it, we're planning as if this is going to be the budget. And I think that's the only prudent thing to do. Through the provost and through Dr. Murphy, we will stay close with the student leadership, including, of course, GPSA, but especially now I'm talking about SA, which is a whole different financing scheme than for grad or professional students, to keep you apprised of what we're thinking. The last comment I would make, and then I'll be glad to take more comments or questions about this or anything, is my concerns about the contract colleges go beyond the capital development, which, you know, very happily looks like it might be okay, and beyond the very serious problems that might occur to the families of students in the college, having to do with the quality of the college itself. And if we end up suffering between 25% and 30% reduction in state support, and that's going to continue for a while, which I think is the only reasonable assumption given the state's economy, we have to figure out how to converge on a solution, sort of an optimization problem, to keep the quality of this of these jewels in the university's crown, and particularly Cal's because of the size of it and because of the vulnerability to state cuts of a variety of types is of great concern. So I hope it answered it, and I'll leave the data with you guys to have a look at, and then we'll be sure to share it with the Sun as well.
So we're going to want to go to the base. Do you remember Melissa L? That's a long time. Please come on up and
I was the Cornell Organization for Labor Action delivered a letter today regarding asking for changes in the Cornell policy towards guest workers in the Cornell campus at Cutter. I was wondering if you had a chance to look at that and read it over.
Yeah, let me say again. Cola delivered the couple hours ago, something like that, a description of issues that they are concerned about.
I wonder if it's my BlackBerry. I don't know. Anyway, issues that that COLA is concerned about having to do with human rights in Qatar, Q-A-T-A-R, the country in the Persian Gulf where Cornell has a medical school. And I've had a chance to read it. I've had a chance to begin the consultation with our colleagues in New York City and Qatar, and I'll be back with you soon about that. I appreciate the information.
Well, I actually have another question for you regarding
that. Sure. Maybe it works better for you than me.
it's just a general question about the topic. Do you believe that workers employed directly or indirectly by Cornell and Qatar have the same rights as workers employed at Cornell and Ithaca?
The question was, if I could paraphrase the question, it's acceptable, is do we want to have the same standards for how we treat employees here, New York City, Qatar, Ethiopia, Singapore, everywhere that we have Cornell campuses? And of course we do. Of course we do. The thing, the complication, of course, is, as I know you realize and your colleagues, is that this is a sovereign country, different country than ours. And we're very concerned about that, as we always are. And there's really two issues. One is our approach to it and the standards to which we hold ourselves, which is, I believe, one question you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important, and I certainly agree with you. The other is the interaction between those policies that we can have and our own employees and how that interacts with the sovereign country that they're in. And that's true. That concern is important. As a general issue, not only in Qatar and here in New York City, but everywhere that Cornell has a program or a campus, which is on five continents right now. And so we are concerned about it, and as soon as I got it, I sent this to begin to get information from the people in Doha and also in New York City. I'll get back to you as soon as I have something to share with you, and they're working on it already, so I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Thank you.
What do you say?
Nice boots.
Oh, you didn't say anything about
have
my,
any.
What about my boots?
Cornell in general, and it was very eye-opening to me. And, you know, in that moment, I just kind of realized just how influential we are in the assembly. And I know a lot of us have seen it this year, but, you know, we had to add people to the assembly because we've all been so overwhelmed because we're all in multiple committees and trying to do as much as we can. And so I'm asking, given the recent financial stress that we were having. But then we're also seeing, you know, changes in race relations and now we're seeing this, you know, the conversation is really, it really starting to heat up a lot. And, you know, of course, I can think of having been handling a lot of these, a lot of the topics of conversation recently. But, you know, given that and given the financial stress, how do you plan on, or how do you plan on, not only you, but also the assembly, in making sure that we are creating an environment where we're not cutting the needs of the minority community, you know, particularly, but then also the whole community. Because, you know, it seems to me that we can't keep, you know, totally different, you know, most diverse things, the Ivy League institutions, and bringing in so many more different minority students and then not having the resources available to support them or make them feel welcome or whatever the case may be.
It's a huge problem, Ulysses, a big, big problem, not only for the student body, but for the employee pool at the university, faculty, staff, and leadership. I think Dr. Murphy will affirm that we're reassessing completely from top to bottom how we plan and implement thinking about diversity on the campus and in New York City as well. I can't give you a flip answer. I can't tell you these are the four things we're going to do that are going to turn things around. I do believe that the elements that will allow us to make progress are even more open communication between us. What usually limits that communication is my schedule. But I think that between the goodwill at SA, GPSA, EA, Faculty Senate, UFC, and University Assemblies, and the excellent senior colleagues working with me in the administration, Dr. Murphy, Mary Opperman, Dr. Fox, and others, I think we can have even more meaningful dialogue. It's not always going to be comfortable, but it's very, very important to talk about it. I'm very concerned, as I believe you are personally and many other folks, about retention of individuals in our community, not only in the student body, but in the employee pool and in leadership positions. Even to some extent, I'm always concerned about recruitment, obviously, but I think retention has been a very big issue. And when an institution has retention issues, you tend to have to think about climate and communication. And so I think we need to work in that regard. I don't know whether Dr. Murphy would want to say anything about organizationally about some of the things we're doing specifically relevant to the undergraduate student body, and I want to yield to her. But I did want to make the point that I agree with you and share the concern, and that it goes beyond the student body.
Ulysses, I think you're absolutely right to point out that there's a tension between the financial environment of the institution and particularly the services and programs and support we can provide for our students. I would be disingenuous if I didn't say there has been and will be some reductions. We're down 7-9% in staff, and the population is up. So I'm sure sometimes you feel that. I hope most of our reductions have been in the administrative areas where the day-to-day impact isn't as evident, but I know what people like Dean Hubble and others are grappling with as we have some vacancies. So there are a couple things I would say. One is I think it calls upon all of us to make sure we are not having redundancy. And in our history of being a decentralized institution, it's very easy to develop redundancy. You face that with student groups and that have redundant missions. We face that with redundant operations. So a lot of what we're trying to do is to look at how we can bring folks together and say we can't afford to do two variations on the same theme. We need to be able to put one. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say, and I think many of you are aware, that in the particular area that you're citing, particularly around our services for students of color, I think there is a lot underway right now that will be changed, so it will make people nervous. You know, there have been conversations that have gone on about how the Office of Minority and Educational Affairs is being restructured. That will allow us to have some concentrated attention around academic success, and also concentrated attention in the Dean and Students Office, and we actually will be adding a position that will be helping us make sure we're providing the support that we need. And the third position will be in the graduate school, where a position is being refocused to being an associate dean of the graduate school for diversity, for inclusion and professional development. So hopefully by the end of this semester, as these searches unfold, you're going to have not only the provost and I, who are working quite closely, Laura Brown, vice provost for undergraduate education, Barb Newth, dean of the graduate school, dean of students Ken Hubble, but three senior staff members in each of our organizations to form a team to say, how do we make sure we're moving forward? And then the last thing I would say is, you know, our investment in the facility at 626 Thurston Avenue, one of the reasons we're doing that is to try to bring together some otherwise small programs that have had to really struggle with administrative support. Let's put them together so that we can provide, you know, a receptionist for several small offices, and that's an example of not having redundant services, A, and B, many of our students are in and out of the various groups. Can we make it easier by providing a spot not to separate, but, you know, to pull people together? So those are just a few thoughts.
So I am going to ask a question about Africana Center, because I'm an Africana major and I remain very interested in what's going on with that. I first just want to preface it by saying that I understand the troubling news of state cuts and federal cuts obviously has an impact on the university, but Africana is an area that you guys are committed to improving and to allocating additional resources. So I think it sort of fits outside of a lot of that troubling news. My question is that if we are engaging in a process, the Reimagining Cornell process, that's going to improve the Africana Center, among other things, for the next 30 to 50 years, engagement seems like a really critical issue there. And what we haven't really heard in this discussion is a lot about your vision, you and the provost, and maybe things that he's talked to you about, for what are the areas in Africana that you like and that you want to see improve. What is the vision and the rationale behind why such an institutional move, change, is being made, beyond the efficiency of, you know, the provost's, you know, costs and things there, because you guys are actually allocating more costs here.
Right. Thanks, Zach. I hope that got into this other thing as well. I forgot whose this is, but okay. Oh, it's yours. this is a very important question. At the level that I'm involved in it, I would say that there's three parts of the vision that are important for me. Two are a change, and one is not a change. The one that's not a change is the focus the physical facility, a place called Africana, which is a physical, what's the word I'm looking for, sort of a manifestation that remains and is solid and inviolable, and that's not a change. But I think it's important to say that. And in that regard, Zach, I think it's important, as so often the case, that you said something that's very critical to the underlying discussion, and that is, this is an area where the cut in state support and so on is not relevant to what's going on, because we've made a decision to prioritize Africana and put more resources into it. The two areas that are relatively new, or at least getting done now, or in the near future, will be the establishment of the doctoral level program and the increase in the faculty complement, that is, more faculty hires. Obviously, those have been things that the faculty in Africana have wanted to do for some time. It wasn't dreamed up in the last year. But the only interaction between the financial situation, especially as Dr. Murphy described it, and Africana, is that we have cut both my office, which is not directly relevant, and the provost's office, which is directly relevant. So those three parts would be my vision, and just to repeat them again quickly, to maintain the physical presence and solidarity of that manifestation of Africana on Tripana, and to create a doctoral program and to increase the faculty complement. And for the more detailed aspects of what the provost, Dr. Harris, and Dr. Lepage may be thinking, I'd have to say that I believe and hope that dialogue is ongoing. I don't know, I haven't talked to any of them about the issue in the last week since I've been back, but that's an overall vision. And as has been the case before, I'm glad to talk to you more about this if you just can schedule time to talk about it. But that's an answer so far as we are right now. I appreciate it. I want to give you this before I forget.
So the student assembly passed Resolution 25 asking for SOAP in the Dorm Act in
it's a fair question. The one thing I would want to correct, though, is Residence Life does not make a profit. It's responsible for all the deferred maintenance of all of its buildings. So anything that doesn't go into the direct program is also helping to support the physical structure. So the issue around, I mean, there is soap in some bathrooms, but not in all. And the question is both a cost of goods, that's probably the nominal. It's also a staffing issue. And I just want to know what are the cost pressures. We are actually, even though the rate increase has occurred, we're actually looking at, within Campus Life, asking them as programs to reduce their expenditures because of what we need to help contribute to the deficit of the university around savings in facilities, saving in energy, and savings in procurement, and what we had to give back last year. So even though your rates are going up, part of it is trying to consolidate our expenditures so we can look at something that you have identified. And just before I'm going to approve an increase in an area, I need to know what it's going to cost. That's all.
Oh, sure. Sure.
One more question, and that goes to representative.
Shout out.
Yeah. So I just want to thank both of you again for coming and answering all our questions.
Sure. Pleasure.
I guess my question goes to climate, as the representative mentioned earlier. Last semester, we saw a lot of issues both on the campus and nationally around violence directed towards individuals, violence directed towards people of certain groups. And part of that was answered by you in your article on civility in the early months of last semester. But I think part of it goes more towards student empowerment and also a sense on campus of what is okay or is not okay. And you know, included in that was the pepper spray resolution that the student assembly tried passing last semester, but that was, I guess, returned by you. And so I guess I was wondering if you don't believe that students should be able to carry pepper spray on campus, if you don't believe that you know, that aspect is the appropriate way to deal with violence on campus, how will the administration help students deal with that and educate their friends about that? Because honestly, I don't think enough people read The Sun and then read your columns in The Sun, and not enough people know where to go to deal with these issues on their own. So what sort of strategic direction do you think you have to deal with it?
Yeah. I'm not shocked to hear that not everybody reads my column, but that's all right. I've been told by the GPSA in no uncertain terms that nobody reads my column, but that's a different group. It's a very important point for two reasons. One, the point itself, and secondly, there's no easy answer to this. If there were an easy answer, we wouldn't live in the kind of society where the violence is so prevalent and two Cornell alums shot in Tucson, Gabby Giffords and Susie Heilemann. And so the first thing I want to say is that I don't claim any special expertise in this whatsoever. Second, however, I would say that on the campus, on this campus, in this particular subculture of a university, we do have people who are experts in at least a portion of it in the CU Police Department. And I'm very proud of the person who leads that department. I'm very proud of the professionalism in the department, and I turned to them for advice when the resolution got here. That's a manifestation, a final common pathway of all the things wrong in our society that cause us to become violent with each other. So the pepper spray is a sort of a safety net kind of a thing, like any other sort of procedure, to stop at the last minute something that's already begun under its own momentum to go in a wrong direction. And so we have to somehow, I believe, Matt, do three things at the same time. One is find some way to listen to each other with really open ears on issues where we just do not line up in the beginning or even after a lot of conversation. And I'm very grateful to you all, to the two community members who asked questions today, and to the general atmosphere at Cornell, that people in general will listen to each other, even though it may not always feel that way. We need to do more of that. We need to do more of that on our side. And you have to decide if you also need to do more. Secondly, I think we need to find those areas where we just do not agree, substantive areas. There'll be many areas we don't agree, but substantive areas, and try to find specific expertise to help us find our way through it. In this particular case, that's what I did by consulting with the CU Police Department, and I have confidence in their point of view. And then the third issue, and it's a very important issue, is after a question is asked, and after an answer is given, and people are very upset with the status quo of that answer, we have to find a way to keep listening and talking with each other. I think that's the hardest of all. Because at a time that we're going through right now, as Dr. Murphy mentioned, there are going to be changes and shrinkage in areas and growth in other areas and change. And it's such a cliche, but it's very, very true that change is unsettling. It's disorienting. And we're committed, it's an overused word, but I am absolutely committed to try to balance the budget as much as possible on the expenditure side and not totally based on tuition. That's why I'm paying so much attention to the tuition trends. That will mean that there will be many, many things that will change based in part on the inability to expend resources as we would in different times. So predictably, we're going to have more things that will cause tension. Predictably, there'll be questions asked and answered, which people are not going to all be happy with the answers. And so those three things, listening to each other to begin with, finding expertise where there is expertise on campus. It may be among the student body, it may be among the staff, it may be among the administration, maybe among the faculty, maybe from outside, like when we brought Bain and Company in. And then finally, when the final decision is made, at whatever level it's made, for us to continue to listen to each other and try somehow to move forward as a community. Yes, please.
And I'd like to just add as well, I don't know whether you were able to participate, but you know, last fall there were several forums that Dean Hubbell and Tracy Matrano sponsored with many other staff trying to have conversations. There's actually an outside speaker here today and tomorrow looking at the use of media. And I guess this is an area that I'm very interested and eager to partner with all of you to help us find a collective voice to call one another out when we see behavior that is untoward. I was dealing with an issue just this week about bullying among a group of students, and I commended the person who brought it forward and said, we have a specific issue where a person is being targeted, but B, we have a community issue. And we need your help here. We need to help because I think there are just all kinds of signals out there about what's okay and not okay, some of which I don't think is okay, that feels okay. So we need to find common and community standards. But this is where also you need to help us, because you're seeing it often more in the front lines, and we may get it either the manifestation a la pepper spray or even after it's escalated. And I think this is an area where when we see hazing, when we see bullying, when we see potential violence, we need to call it out sooner than later, and we need to work together, students, faculty, staff, and experts, both to call it out, say it's not okay, support the person who may be, or the persons who may be victims. And if you've got ideas around continued conversations that you as SA want to sponsor and you want our help, there are several things being planned this spring, not the least of which is going on right now with Dan Solov here, but other folks who are coming to campus, but would welcome your partnership on that.
Sorry to eat up so much time, but I just wanted to make one more comment. A lot of our interaction, formal interaction, besides these precious minutes that we spend together, comes in the form of resolutions. I'm very willing, it's up to you, not for me to tell you how to communicate with anybody, but I'm very willing to receive other communications, and I know Dr. Murphy would be, on behalf of the SA, other than resolutions. So, for example, if the SA decided at the beginning of the semester to share with us, 5, 7, 10, 3 concerns that you all are thinking about, even though you don't have a resolution, even though you don't have a specific thing to ask, even though you don't have a specific remedy to suggest, why couldn't we do that? Why couldn't we be looking at what things you are thinking about? I read the coverage of the essay every time it comes out. I do read your columns in the Daily Sun, but that's okay. It's okay. But in all seriousness, if you wanted to send any sort of communication on behalf of your agenda or the things the SA is considering doing. It doesn't only have to be in the form of a resolution. It could be something to make sure that I'm on the right track. And especially Dr. Murphy is and Dean Hubble are much closer to the day-to-day interactions that you're having. But if you want to communicate with me in any other way separate from the resolutions, it would be very important to me, in addition to the occasional, you know, joint student leader meetings we have with SA, GPSA, and IFC, and Penn Hill, and so on. So just a thought. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Before we get into the resolution and explaining it again, I have an amendment to make that hopefully you'll all find friendly and we'll vote on it. The amendment is, first, we want to change the name Clean Environment by Reflection and Oversight. Okay. I have it, so you don't have to go crazy.
All right, so the amendment is to be proposed to change the name Clean Environment.
Do I have to, can I do all one amendment? Like, these are small changes.
Yes.
Okay. Clean Environment by Reflection and Oversight. And the other one is to add the word undergraduate in the Be It Therefore Resolved that states that the Student Activities Office amend their online contract for an undergraduate organization's official registration. So to specify undergraduate there. Then we want to eliminate all wording in the revised Environmental Committee's charge, cutting it off after request to hold a hearing with the officers of the student organization in question, period. So any of that talk of penalization is gone. And then lastly, I want to change the sponsors. I'm still on it. Reneal's still on it. Jeffrey Block, SAEC member, freshman representative, should be on it. If you want to sit here, Jeff, you can. Then we have Melina Khan, and I have all these names. So Melina Khan, she's president of Greeks Go Green. Casey Albee, president of Sustainability Hub. Sharon Martin, to my left, president of Take Back the Tap. Taylor DeRosier, president of Cornell Ski Club, Snowboard Club. Abby Wessel, Society for Natural Resource Conservation. Adam Fisher, president of Cornell Hillel. And the following, who are all Cornell University Sustainable Design student leaders: Justin McEwen, Jeremy Blum, Dara Pearl, Sam Sineski, Barry Began, Karen Chi-Chi Lin, Daniel Liu, Michael Jang, Carly Dean, Alexander Quint, Jonathan Leet, Johnny Lau, Joseph Boudet, Juliet Dubroca, Karina Steinhoff, Eric Rutgers. And lastly, that the SA Environmental Committee voted on this resolution 7-0-1.
That's a lot. Let's do the first. Do what we're going to do first. We're going to approve the change of the name, sponsors of the resolution, and the approval of the Environmental Committee first. So the First Amendment, like three amendments that we'll do, is by any dissent to those amendments. Seeing none, those amendments are approved. Can you go to the next amendment after that?
After the title, it's to add the word undergraduate to that Be It Therefore Resolved clause, just so we specify that we're talking about undergraduate organizations only.
Is there any dissent to that?
Then the Environmental Committee charge, we wanted to delete all that wording regarding penalization, so the last couple sentences, and that is to help us make this more friendly.
So
So, and where did that start exactly?
After question. So, we could have a hearing with you, officers of the student organization in question. So we're keeping in, once the challenge is forwarded to the Student Assembly Environmental Committee, the committee can request to hold a hearing with the officers of the student organization in question, and deleting all language subsequent.
So it's already actually
in the resolution? Yeah, but it was never voted on.
Okay. So it's already shown there to change. Is there any consent to that? Seeing none, we can approve.
Okay, and the last is to do the sponsors aforementioned.
All right.
We're good.
So go ahead.
Okay, so those changes were made in response to some of your concerns. I know that some of you were, you really wanted to have the byline funded organizations covered. We didn't know there were a couple missing from who don't have to register with the SAO, so we are glad to combine with Resolution 37. And we wanted to cut out that language of penalization because we feel that we do have that ability, just as anyone sitting here, to write a resolution making a recommendation about what should happen with the group's money or recognition. So that language wasn't altogether necessary. So hopefully you'll find this resolution a lot more friendly and easier. And as for the new sponsors, that was in response to many of you who asked us how many student leaders have we spoken to. Do you think they'd be comfortable with such a policy going into place? So we wanted to, you know, heed those concerns, and so we talked to people and we got those people to sign on. As for the rest of it, it's a simple resolution. We're just saying that we want to make sure that all Cornell organizations are acting sustainably, that are under part of the undergraduate community, that are allowed to use the resources of Cornell University, including financial resources. So we just figure having them fill out a paragraph or two about their effects on the environment or about their sustainable practices is not too much to ask. So we hope you are happy with this combined resolution and the amendments. And any questions?
I have to walk out the door, but I just wanted to say that I'm happy to see something that has substantially more teeth and may actually have an effect passing through the SA compared to what came through the GPSA.
All right.
Thank
you.
So, I'll ask you a question. So, by removing the if-computer based student-compliant line, how are you looking to present the idea, which I think you still have, that the group is still penalized if they don't provide it?
Well, we figured that we could express that this is, are you saying if we're getting a real non-compliant committee and we want to...
Group, right.
Well, we would express to them how it's our charge to make sure that they're being sustainable, and we would express how we have the ability as an SA committee to bring this issue to the SA for further consideration, and that could eventually mean a financial penalty of some kind or perhaps loss of recognition. So it doesn't have to be written down is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay. I would personally support seeing that written down, but I'll follow it if you'd like to put it on. But any other questions?
You could motion to amend.
No, I'm not sure. I'd rather not. But somebody else wants to amend. Anyway,
Well, it's possible that the registration will go through if you leave a blank space in any part of that form. They'll get sent to us weekly, and they won't be waiting for our approval of their form on each one of these registration forms. Perhaps if you leave it entirely vacant, it won't allow you to do it electronically. I can't tell you because it hasn't been invented yet. But I can't tell you that. So you're saying all committee registrations now have to pass through the SAORC? Okay, the new ones. Okay, so that's a yes. Sweet.
This is not really a question. I'm just really pleased that we were able to kind of start with something that was kind of met last week and end up with a pretty nice product where the CIA and the DPSA work together to come up with a way of you know, resolving differences and creating a really great package. So I'm quite proud and condescending as I can. I'm very young.
Thank you. That's a good question, and I think that was really the intent of the resolution. We don't want to see things hit the SA like this group is not being sustainable. We want to be able to, if we hear something, if we get a challenge from a community member, that's why all that's in there, or if we just look at their statement and see that their group's practices are different, we want to be able to email them if we have to, hold a hearing with them, communicate with them what they could do better. And do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, yeah, I just want to emphasize that. Yeah, on the communication point also, now clubs could have the option to appoint a sustainability officer as well. So that's also going to help ease with communication as well, to have someone kind of focused on that. So that's going to make it just that much more easier to communicate with them. Oh. Okay, Kyle Ward, sophomore.
Sherry Martin, senior.
They're both members of the SAUC. No, I didn't mention his name in the sponsor thing. My last communication with him was at about 2 p.m. today. He wanted to take his name off of it, and his words were because he... as a former student trustee, he didn't want to be on anything that might not completely pass through President Scorton's vote or whatever. Anyway, as for that article, I also contacted the writer after I saw that. I thought it was pretty one-sided, and he expressed to me how their managing editor happened to cut out a lot of the quotes from our committee just to, in terms of length. So it wasn't he agreed it wasn't a fair representation of what happened.
Remember, this is a charter change, so we need 16 yeses. And that's the same thing, no problem.
It's not prediction.
Yeah.
I think there's like people here. Oh. That's one abstention.
Bajaj?
Yes.
Block?
Yes.
Brockman?
Yes.
Anser?
Yes.
Desai?
He proxied. Yes. Okay. No one's in this room. That's what I want to know.
We do have a form, so by motion 1305, motion
to carry. Yes. Ridiculous.
Moving to resolution 53, communication budget change. We back to that. So remember, this is new business, so we'll allow them, two questions, just to finish their presentation, give it 30 seconds.
Okay. Nice new website, more promotions, $1,000, $650 goes to website services for Joseph Eula?
Yes.
And $350 goes to additional promotion for the website and for C4, which is in the spring. And this is going to be taken out of the unallocated funds we have, which are in the range of $16,000. It's going to be reallocated to the communications committee for these purposes.
And just a side note, the website that we're getting over $3,000 worth of work done for $650 because we are a student organization and we know him through a connection. So this is a bargain basement deal for something that's going to pretty much change our organization.
And if you go to cornellsa.org right now, you can be pretty fancy. This is a full page. Like, if you go just to that, like, coming soon, that's your representation of, like, all the want to see.
Yeah.
But first, on speaking with the representative person.
Yeah, so how it works before, sorry I didn't explain this before, is that right now we have a blog and we pay for our we've been paying separately for our domain name, cornellsa.org, and it hasn't been used. So we've basically been paying $5 just to keep the name. So now we're just switching it so that we're using this name. Also, we're only paying him a one-time fee for designing the website. It's all going to be able to be run by me and by the future Vice President for Public Relations. I actually just sent him a bunch of emails asking him questions about how to run the website and how to change it. And he sent me video tutorials back of every single question I have, which I will keep on file for the next Vice President of Public Relations, so they will be able to change any aspect of this website. We are merely just paying him for designing the interface that we can change at any time, because it's run through WordPress.com. Yeah, everyone has access. It's a public forum. The only thing you won't be able to see is messages that people send back and forth, kind of like a Facebook message.
Okay. Representative Burke.
I motion to move business
today. Yes. Motion for second. There's any dissent? Seeing none, move business today. Representative Cigars. All right.
Call it. Call it.
My concern is that have you talked to any groups or students that you're involved with? Do you plan on using the social networking facilities that the reason why I ask is that I'm involved in Foundation on Campus, and several conferences have a similar social media feature. The only problem is no university uses them that attend. So I don't want, I think it might be a good endeavor, but I don't want to waste money where folks may not
Okay, yeah, so that raises up a lot of points. First, I want to note that that's intercollegiate. We're just talking about right intracollegiate. So this is something that is a student assembly initiative. So this will be up to myself along with all representatives to get the word out about. I have talked to some big student organizations. I don't want to put their names on record, but they're already very excited about this website. And I've been talking to a lot of student leaders that feel like there's not one centralized place for students to go. I know Vice President Murphy talked about we're a very decentralized university, and there's really been a gap of where all students can come together, and this provides one outlet for them. An additional point is that we're planning on doing a website anyways, and this is our blog as well as our way to get to students. So whether it's used or not, we still need a better interface than what we're using right now, where we're averaging about 40 hits a day, maybe even less. With even one of the things that we're planning on using, the university calendar, for example, the people we're partnering with had 1,200 hits a day just looking at that calendar. So I don't believe that this is a waste of money at all, and I would have never asked to use this money if I thought it was the case.
Furthermore, his services were already negotiated down. I think it was originally like the quote was like $1,000.
$3,000.
So we negotiated it down a lot, and I think that dropping the social media aspect is more of just like copying code over for him. So it's not like he's charging us $400 more to do that.
Okay. Right, and it will never, I will make sure that it will never evolve into College ACB. I actually got that same question, and we're working right now on just making sure that there are privacy concerns being addressed.
Okay.
Can we call for a hand?
Bajard?
Yeah.
Bajard?
Yes.
Block.
Yeah.
Rockman.
Yes.
Sander.
Yes.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks. Thanks.
Yep.
Bruce?
Yes.
Rex?
Yeah.
Rao?
Yes.
Seth?
Yes.
Ben?
Yes. Yagwin? Yes.
8-8-0-0.
Yay.
Thanks, guys.
Moving to Resolution 50, proper reasoning.
So Kristen couldn't make it, and Ava, who's the other co-sustainability chair, is she should be coming at the moment, but I guess I'll just go ahead with this. We haven't had too much luck with these environmental resolutions, so maybe third time's the charm. This resolution is basically a recommendation for student groups to do a couple things. We have composting and recycling facilities on campus that I think, and a lot of people think, are underutilized. We've met with Cornell Dining, with waste management facilities. They think this is feasible. Basically, just a recommendation for number one. We want students, student organizations that have kind of large-scale food events to have proper recycling and composting bins and such at their events. Number two, we want to change the UUP form so you can request for your student organization event recycling and composting bins. And then finally, it's just a recommendation for student groups having these large-scale events to use compostable plates, cutlery cups. And the reason that we're just recommending is because we don't really think we have enough kind of manpower to oversee all these events. So we're going to kind of rely on students and student groups to do this themselves. So I guess I can take questions. I wish Ava were here, though, because she can really answer them better.
All right. First off, would the clerk please report if there's a typo that would amend it automatically? And the third view, there will result clause. It says form, should be from. Is it form?
From, yes.
All right, first on the speaking list is Representative Andrews.
So, first of all, John Rao, environmental. I'm confused by this. So,
it came through my committee.
Confused the job. So, my question is, so when a human group filled out a sheet that they want to request these things, so I guess the board on dining, bring them to the event, and then move them afterwards, or just
I wouldn't be Cornell Dining. I'm pretty sure it's Waste Management. If you request it for the event, it'll be delivered to the event. I would imagine. I can double check, but I'm pretty sure that they're the ones who would control this. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that would happen. No.
Is there any team members about that question? Sure.
This is
more towards
just a question. Does this resolution pertain to events that are funded by student assembly, FASB money? So, like, if the group has, like, additional sources of revenue, then we'll post them in a private event.
Well, I mean, obviously, we don't have the authority to tell student groups to do this, that, and the other. Or at least we don't want to say that. So I think we're just kind of hoping that most large-scale student events that have food and beverages would do this.
Representative Bajaj. You're welcome.
My question is in regards to the presentation that President Torrey and Vice President Murphy had earlier. In relation to Fresh Start Students Block recommendation that we have so fantastic, but it's guiding the basic necessity in residential halls, they said that the primary concern would be the cost and analysis and so on and so forth. So I was wondering if either yourself or anyone in the committee, or committee as a whole, has seen the cost of acquiring these funds that we have been,
sure. I think that's a great question, and I think it kind of speaks to this resolution as a recommendation and not a mandate. I think we're leaving it up to student groups at their discretion to say, is this worth it? Are we having two pizza pies and 2 liters of soda? Do we really need a composting bin and a recycling bin? Or, maybe we're having 100 pizzas and 50 bottles of soda. The cost of composting bins, I actually did a project on this for one of my classes. It's actually cheaper if you fill up a bin of compost than filling up a bin of trash, because the composting facility is actually only 2 miles away. It's 30 miles away to take it to the nearest landfill. So not only is it cheaper in gas, but there's less greenhouse gas emissions and stuff like that. There are enough composting bins on campus. We met with Waste Management, and they think this is feasible. So I think the beauty of this resolution is that it's a recommendation and not a mandate, and we want to leave it up to groups to say, is it really worth it for us to get a big bin if we're just going to have a pizza? But I think most major events, which is what this would cover, would have substantial amounts of food to actually make this feasible and also cost efficient. Sure, I vote yes.
If you are against the amendment, please raise your flag.
Resolution.
If you are abstaining, please raise your flag. By vote of acclamation, the Bureau,
The resolution is adopted.
Kristen and Ava, thank you.
All right, moving on to Resolution 51, addressing legislative issues through internal changes to the Assembly. Representative Danger, if you grasp, there's some objections. Union member White, it's called.
All right, so I have I've got two things, first of all. First, I'd like to add... Oh, no, it's... Oh, BB. All right, so I have two amendments. One is I would like to add the following names as co-sponsors to this resolution. So first of all, Representative Finn will be a co-sponsor on this resolution. In addition to the following names, and I will send this to the clerk later, but Lisa Opdyke, 11, co-founder of Students Acting for Gender Equality. Catherine Spallina, 11, Vice President of Outreach and Consent Ed. Jacqueline Rios, Class of 11, Cornell Women's Resource Center Advisory Board Member, Secretary Consent Ed. Jessica Biedelman, 2012, Vice President of Communication to the Pantelletic Council and Consent Ed Member. Julianne Freeman, who's already on there, so I'll skip. Aaron Button, Class of 11, Member of Students Acting for Gender Equality. And Deanna Ping, Class of 12, Co-founder of Students Acting for Gender Equality, Vice President of Finance for Consent Ed. All right, with that said, there's also another amendment in the article where it says one of which shall represent female students. I'd like to change from female students to women's issues. And in the, bylaw change, I'd like to change it from including the Student Assembly women to Student Assembly women's issues and LGBT at large.
All right, we're going to start with the sponsors. The president has changed the process to that list. Is there any dissent to that amendment? Seeing none, the sponsors have been changed.
The second one is in the article itself where it says one of which shall represent female students. It should now say one of which shall represent women's issues. And in the bylaw change where it says including the Student Assembly women and LGBT, it should say including the Student Assembly women's issues and LGBTQ, blah, blah, blah.
And so those are both amendments to the exact same places. Do you all understand that amendment? To paraphrase the director, because it doesn't necessarily mean that the representative has to be awarded, but it's correct.
Correct.
That's a pretty big change.
It's similar to the LGBT minority and international seats.
Okay. You have a question?
I have a question about the language around it, so I think we can
That's fine, but ask the question.
It says a majority of the committee, including
where?
A majority of the committee, including ex officio members, shall be composed of undergraduate students who have demonstrated a commitment to issues of great concern to women, including the Student Assembly women's issues and LGBT at large representatives who shall chair the committee. So are you saying both of those seats will chair the committee?
Yeah, you're right about that. Okay, so let's also move the who shall serve as chair of the committee over to right after the word issues and before the word and. So we'll include that in the amendment also. Good call. So you're going to move the words who shall serve as chair of the committee to after the word issues in my current amendment and before the word and. Thank you.
Okay, so does everybody understand the amendments? We are going to do a yay nay vote.
Oh, yeah. Voice vote, my favorite.
On the amendment. If you are in favor of the three changes, which is going to be one amendment, say yay.
Yay!
Yay!
Yeah. If you're opposed, say nay. The yay is passed and the amendment is passed.
All right, now I will start talking. I'll start talking on the resolution itself.
Before we start, though, I just do have a few comments
First off, this is a charter change, but we need 16 yeses, proxies do not count. Also, because we have already started the election cycle, and because we do have to get approved by the president, this will not apply to next year's assembly. This charter change would be for not this election cycle, but the next spring election cycle. That's when this is going to be set. Are there any questions about this? Seeing none, you have 4 minutes to speak.
All right. So I'd like to start off first by saying that at the end of last semester, regardless of the acrimony that occurred at those meetings, we added 4 seats to the SA. And at the time, I was very adamant about designating them for classes or blah, blah, blah. And I think that was, in a way, wrong. Because it was kind of a rushed decision to try to find some way to designate these seats for something useful. And I was kind of grasping at straws off, you know, out of thin air. Over winter break, I had conversations with a number of people. This was not an idea that, you know, I'd had brewing for a while, but something that kind of came out of just people's comments to me was, we want the new members of the SA to be dealing with issues that we have failed as an assembly to deal with over the years. We want these new representatives to kind of take the burden off of, you know, the current members who are dealing with their own responsibilities and you know, all that we have on our plate already. And it came to me as I was thinking about this and working on other things related to women's issues, that what this assembly is really missing is someone devoted to those issues. We have a women's issues committee, but currently it's inactive. We have multiple issues of violence against women on campus, and it falls to individual SA members to take the initiative on that. And I thought to myself, why should there not be someone specifically devoted to chairing the Women's Issues Committee and making sure that's a priority, making sure that violence against women issues aren't falling to the LGBT seat or other members of the SA who have an interest to bring these up as issues. And so that kind of was the background for how this resolution emerged. I just want to address a couple of things I've heard so that maybe we can avoid questions or whatever. But first I'd also, you know, none of them are here because they had to go for a meeting, because a couple of women's issues meetings actually meet at the same time as the SA. But I just really want to thank all the co-sponsors on this. I think you'll notice one is the diversity of them. I mean, there are men and women, people from all years, people from numerous groups now that we added them. I'm sorry? Well, no, there's plenty of co-sponsors already on there, including men. You know, it's at the end of the day, I think there's a really great list of people backing this. All right, now on to other thoughts. So one issue isn't this kind of putting one seat where all the women are going to run for this one seat, and so we'll end up with one woman on the SA, which is down from two. And I guess my response to that is, you know, how many does every minority student run for only the minority seats? No. I just look around the room. You look at this table, there are minority students in positions that are the non-minority seats in positions on the SA. Two, will only women run for this seat? Look at me, clearly designating a seat for the issues of a specific classification of students on campus does not mean that only people in that community will run for it. People interested in those issues, people committed to those issues will run for it. And in a way, that's a bridge-building experience for the campus that allows people who want more experience in a certain matter to gain that. I'm not sure if does anyone at this table want to speak specifically to anything?
I mean, I can speak really hard, but whatever.
Yeah, if you'd like to, that's fine. There's a motion to extend.
Yeah, basically, just before your vote, the student assembly should be a adequate representation of the undergraduate student population. With the seats we currently have right now, we have 2 minority seats, an international seat, every college, LGBTQ rep, but the one thing that the key seat that we do not have is someone to represent women, which represent over 50% of the undergraduate student population. Similarly, when we you know, and keep this in mind when you want to vote. Do you really want to be the guy who shot this down? Keep that in mind.
All right.
No, I'm actually
relaxed. Representative Watt. I just had a question. Do you guys think that would be better to pass this possibly next year with the confirmation of the assembly? And the reason why I say that is because, like, one of the things that we're supposed to get, you know, get that, like, history lesson, but the amount of women is very long year on the assembly. And so I guess, I just feel like if we'll call it next year, we'll also address them for next year's election cycle. But right now, we don't know what to make of this community, so we could have an equal amount of women in the next.
Yeah. The issue is not the number of women on the assembly. I want to make that very clear right now. It is an issue that there aren't more women on the assembly, but that's not what this is trying to do. I'd love it if there was 50% representation, but what this resolution is seeking to do is to designate someone specifically for women's issues. And I don't want to assume that just because there's more women on the SA means that those women are all going to be interested in dealing with women's issues. People have different passions. And so, and it shouldn't just fall to, you know, the women on the SA to deal with women's issues. It should fall to someone who has specifically demonstrated an interest in women's issues. And that's what this is trying to do. So if there's 50, or if the entire assembly next semester is women, if none of the SA next semester is women, that doesn't matter to me and this resolution. What matters is there someone who will consistently be there to represent women's issues on this campus, and those are perennial. Violence against women is a perennial issue, et cetera. And Chauncey had a thought, and then Natalie also.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to, I'll piggyback that. A lot of things that I've seen is we've been responding to a lot of issues. A lot of amendments and resolutions and things that we've passed have been retroactive. So putting this out now would be making a tangible step toward proactive solutions in the future. And, I mean, that's all I wanted to say as far as that's concerned. I'll pass it to Natalie.
Yeah.
I appreciate
one
that.
Yeah, and I just want to say, as the former Women's Issues Chair, I was chairing the resolution. I was chairing this committee when it had been inactive for 2 years. No one wanted to touch the committee. And I took it on last year. It was my baby. But this year, I had so many responsibilities to do. I couldn't give it the due time to just support to that. And so it really doesn't matter what the makeup is. I think you guys should pass this.
I'm completely in favor of this resolution. I just had a couple of really quick questions, although I am now disappointed that there is a men's issue to be included to be one as well.
You can take care of that.
Yeah, men's issues as well. Thank you very much.
That's dirty, okay.
I don't know if you're going to drop this stuff. Like, I kind of walked in the middle of you talking to several times, but is this going to be in time to go into play for the
No. No, unfortunately not.
Is there any way we can do that?
I just spoke to Ari, and he seemed adamant about not doing it. Whether or not Vince can force his hand is not my call, but...
I guess, like, this is something that I brought up with the assembly in the past, so, like, we make the rules, we don't follow them, so, like, if there's something that we...
we follow them, too, but...
I'm saying, like, we should be bound by the rules that we create, so, like, something like this, that I don't think we're, like, you know, pissing anyone off by you know, restructuring something to get this done.
All right. Yeah, absolutely.
When this passes,
you look into that then, President Andrews.
Yeah.
That's.
Cool.
You're here. You second that.
Really passionate about supporting this. I'm going to call a question.
Second.
You call a question. Second. Call back up. And this is we do have 6 more people.
All the
job. Second.
I'm not adamant about this. Calling the question.
So I'm going to preface my comments with the fact that I introduced back to policy sitting in one of the respective freshman and first year and I've been working with just before and after the situation we brought to the table. That said, what I want to point out is that in Andrew's presentation of the resolution, he kept saying that the fact that there are men on the resolution, there are men supporting, there are men being sponsored, there are men, you know, that do support or are thinking about supporting the resolution. And I want to say that means that even the sponsors, you know, I'm seeing about here, even the sponsors of this resolution feel that this creation of the seat almost marginalizes women's issues into that one seat to concern. Rather than having all the issues that women face, need to concern all students and members of the issues chair, women issues representative would take those under her wing or under her wing, probably her wing, take it under her wing.
Don't assume.
Sorry. Take it under her wing and, you know, try to move forward in that respect. In that sense, I feel that this would be counterproductive. I honestly, like, I've had, unfortunately, I've had close friends that have been the victims of sexual abuse. So it's not that I don't think that these issues should be addressed. I just feel that these issues should be addressed by the assembly as a whole. And I feel that this resolution marginalizes those issues into one representative as it should. Therefore, I feel that, you know, that there is a problem with the student assembly. This is three main problems that I see. One is that there isn't more women representation, and that deserves its own report. Number two is that we don't view women's issues as concerns, as representatives. So I think the response to that shouldn't be by giving them all to one representative. We should, you know, find constructive ways to make sure that we as representatives are representing women in our country.
All right. Oh, can I speak to that? I can't speak to the first constructive critique of... Okay.
First of all, you know, I think I could have done a better job of getting the women's issues coming together. It is really tough because we're constrained by, how many committees that everyone's serving on, and also the fact that the only two women on the ESA is here. But I think it's a very good, you know, it's a very good idea that with the response to the Concord, I don't think by designating one person as a women's issues representative, that means that everyone else in the committee is going to also pick down women's issues. If the, you know, say the pepper spray resolution came up, you know, because there are women who are being abused in the community, I guarantee you that everyone on the MSA would also have sympathy for those women, and I don't think just because there's someone who has sort of women under their name means that they're the only one who's allowed to or will not do that. So I think it's a great idea.
Can I respond to Representative Gitlin?
You have 50 seconds.
All right. The same way that there aren't only the minority seats caring about minority issues, I'm not the only one on this assembly that cares about LGBT issues, I hope. And the international rep is not the only person who cares about international issues. Just because you have someone who is fiercely devoted to an issue does not mean that you have other people who are also nominally interested in other issues. But I think it's important to realize that right now, in past essays, we've had people who are somewhat interested in women's issues, or kind of interested in women's issues, or will take up the issue every now and then, now and again. That's not right. Well, when the Women's Issues Committee was defunct for 2 years before Natalie came along and revamped it, I mean, that's a perfect example. People were interested, but not interested enough. And that's something we need to address. And I think that your concern dealt exactly with the title of this resolution, addressing women's issues through internal changes to the student assembly. Having someone in this room specifically devoted to women's issues will make everyone in this room think about it more. The same way half of you didn't understand what LGBT meant when you came into this room at the beginning of the semester. Now you all know exactly how to say that acronym as quickly as I can. I think that speaks to this. If you have someone dealing with these issues on a day-to-day basis, you will deal with them too.
So the time is 6:30 and I have 6 people on speakers list, so I'm going to motion to adjourn and discuss this morning.
All right, thank you.
What he's saying is that we should have 24 representatives.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.